Hey Nick, how's it going?
I'm dying.
You're dying? Oh no.
I've got man flu.
Oh dear. Don't give it to me.
I know. I nearly did say about not coming over and doing it, but we're on a roll of having so many episodes out in a row. I didn't want man flu to...
Yeah, man up. Can't let that stop you.
I know. So, otherwise, Jed, generally good, yeah?
Yeah, good. Good. It's been a good week for you?
It has, yes. I've got a few updates. So, been working with... Oh, first of all, I was going to say, what do you think of the Apple Watch?
I've paid very little attention to it, have to you? Be honest. Yeah, I didn't even watch the videos or anything.
You did not? No. I haven't seen the $10,000 gold one then.
I've heard a lot of people talking about it, but right. I haven't seen it, no.
I could see you with a $10,000
Apple Can you? Watch. Can yeah. you? Just suits really. My style, doesn't it? Yeah.
I think I'll wait for a few friends to get them first.
Yeah.
I was a bit younger. I used to try to be the early adopter who always used to spunk money on loads of gadgets and shit, but not this time.
No. I like the idea of some sort of a watch like that, but I don't think I'm a...
But I haven't worn a watch for years, so...
Haven't you?
No.
No, I do wear a normal watch.
Do you?
Yeah. I wouldn't mind a smartwatch of some variety. More for running, actually, than anything.
But you still need to carry your phone for the GPS, I think.
Yeah, I don't mind that, though, because I've always got my phone with me anyway.
So why do you need the watch?
So I can read it when I'm running. So I don't have to take my phone out to see what's going on. Okay. See, that's what I mean.
Let you off.
Yeah.
Cool. So yeah, I was going to say, anyway, I've been working with Gavin, the golf pro that I've been working with.
Ah, right, cool.
And that's good. He sent out an email newsletter on Monday. He got 2 new lesson bookings out of it.
So fantastic. So out of how many people does he send the email to?
Oh, do you know, I'm not sure, actually.
So that would be good to
it's
track.
It's in the hundreds. Yeah, right. Yeah. And it's something he's done before, as in he sent out his newsletter before and got bookings before, but it's not something he does regularly.
Right.
So I'm trying to get him to send something out every Monday.
Yeah.
Because the idea being that most people play golf on the weekend, and so if they've had a bad round, him tapping them up on Monday saying, hey, how did your weekend golf go? Did you fancy a lesson or anything? It's a good time
thinking.
To do it.
Good thinking, yeah.
So he's also being more aggressive at collecting emails off the members at the golf club as well.
Right.
To grow his email thing. And it's just... I guess I've been in conversation with him now for like 3 or 4 weeks and we're still just sorting. I've got random shit here written down, but bits and pieces out. So like he doesn't use an email signature. And so I've been, I've been trying to say, everything you do is a marketing opportunity.
Yeah.
So, email signature should have your links to your Facebook page, your website, Twitter, so on and so forth. He had Google Analytics set up on his existing website, but he didn't know the account to log in. So we've had to go through and set all that up again. So we've lost a bit of historical data, but so it's almost like the administration stuff we're still kind of working on. But, as we've seen, just sending out a newsletter can have a positive, get some lessons.
See, I've often wondered about the whole Google Analytics thing, because I know it's easy to do and you can go in there. It is quite complicated if you're not used to seeing that sort of information.
Mm.
So I've often wondered about these small businesses that don't have that knowledge. They want to know the information, obviously, but they don't necessarily have the knowledge or the time to look it up.
Yeah,
that could be a service, providing a report every week.
Well, that's it, and that's part of it's part of what I was planning to offer, really. I guess, it's like you say, he's had analytics set up on his website since it was built, 2 or 3 years ago, but he's never actually logged in to have a look at it.
Yeah,
and so even going forwards, I don't expect him to really have a look at it, but it's more for me having a baseline of knowing where he is now. And seeing, what difference we can make. But
I've heard that so many times of people say, I've got Google Analytics. No idea what it is or what it does, but I've got it. It's like, anyway.
Yeah, so that's interesting. So, from helping Gavin out, thinking forward and projecting forward, helping golf pros out is something it's proven, or at a basic level, it's proven that, I can help them out in terms of their marketing and getting things set up and social media stuff.
Yeah.
And there seems to be a need in terms of Gavin needed help. But the big question still remains, are there enough golf pros that need this kind of help? And is there an easy and scalable way to be able to try and find them?
Yeah.
And so that's a little bit of what I've been working on this week in terms of setting up some Twitter cards for a bit of marketing for the ebook and stuff like that.
So have you found those?
So I only set them up yesterday. So they seem really good, because I was going to go through and write up this whole ebook page and then set up a Twitter advert to link through to it, but I couldn't be bothered to do all of that. So I heard they were talking about Twitter cards on Startup for the Rest of Us, where you can just set up a Twitter little advert thing, and it has a little button on it saying send me more information or email me more details or something, whatever you want to put on the button.
Yeah.
And when the Twitter user clicks on it, it submits their email address and name to Twitter, so you can then download it as a lead.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, like you were saying before we started recording, you have to make that Twitter card really compelling.
Yeah.
And you only have like the tweet, like a byline and an image to go with it, and whatever text you put on the button to try and encourage people to, you know, submit and become a lead. But we'll see. It started running yesterday, and
it was interesting because I saw you sent me a link to it, didn't you, just to test it out for you. And the first glance at it, the picture that you used, it looked like two blokes fighting because it was like a golf pro helping somebody. Yeah. But I thought, I best warn you about that. And I thought, hang on a minute, that might be quite good because it attracts your attention. And then, you know, a split second later, you realise, you see the word golf and you realise what's going on. You see it's a golf pro helping out somebody. But it just...
This is a thing to experiment with, I guess. I might try a pile of money. Like, do you want more money from your lessons or something like that?
Well, you remember on Bootstrap with Kids, they talked about business cleavage.
Yeah.
Remember about how Breck found that using a picture of a... the sort of stock photos of business women and so on did far better for him than many other pictures on these kind of ads.
Yeah. So I guess the next thing to find out is if this is scalable in terms of finding more people like Gavin that need this kind of help. I guess if nothing else, you know, it's actually quite enjoying helping Gavin and getting all these things set up and stuff like that. And, you know, him as a self-employed person, he's got no one to really call on and get this kind of help. So, you know, even if I don't make any money from it, I'm kind of enjoying it. So whether it's, I just, if there isn't a scalable way of doing it, of carrying on doing it and seeing it as a way of kind of paying it forward or whatever, and something comes out of it later, who knows?
Yeah, it does feel good doing that sort of thing, doesn't it? Yeah, I think I agree.
Right, so what have you been up to this week then?
Me? Well, I've been in my refreshing, clear mind, not worrying about building anything.
So we wanted to clarify last week's podcast a bit, I guess, as well.
Yeah, it seems that I didn't make it completely clear that joined up data is kind of gone. Well, this is probably why people think that, because I'm going to hedge my bets again now and say it's not dead, as in it'll never be used again. You know, the website is going to stay there. I'm going to just leave it though. I'm just going to not do anything with it. Now, if somebody comes along to me at some point and says, right, I want you to do this, which matches exactly what joined up data was or fits really well, then I'm not going to say no. I'll contemplate it and I'll evaluate it at the time to see what else is going on. But in terms of further development or marketing or anything, I'm just leaving it for now. And then we'll see what happens. So I basically just stopped worrying for the past week about anything really. And it's been good. It's been really refreshing actually. After a couple of days of managed to wean myself off thinking about stuff. I've tried to avoid reading too much bootstrappy startup stuff and listening to things. It's been good. Inevitably, you know, a couple of days ago, after having a clear mind over the weekend, and a couple of days ago, all these ideas have started popping into my head, and it's like, you know, it's mad. I went for a run yesterday, and it was all manic. I couldn't stop thinking about things. So I just keep noting them down and then forgetting about them again, and so on and so forth. So that's been really good, yeah. Another thing, well, big news for me anyway, I signed up for Amy Hoy's 35x500 course, which is coming up. So I'm looking forward to that. And I think the actual training doesn't really start until April, so I've got a little while before then. And I remember you were talking about your forever project. Is that the word you used?
Yeah, I guess so, yeah.
For the golf.
More stats tracking of rounds and how many fairways and putts and all that kind of stuff.
And I was thinking about that a lot and about how part of the stress was trying to attach some sort of way of earning money to the things that I wanted to work on. So I'd never have just a open source project that I did from the good of my heart or anything like that, you know, or just because I was interested in. And I never had a side project that just tinkered with because I just liked tinkering with it. And one of the ideas was around this meet. I talked before about the meetings product I've got, the app I've got out there on the Windows 8 store, which is rubbish. But that whole area is interesting to me, and it's interesting to me because of my involvement with the FSB we've talked about before, where it's a pain in the arse trying to work with a bunch of volunteers as part of an organization where you've got formal rules that you have to abide by. You know, you've got you've got to have the proper agenda, the proper minutes for meetings, you've got to track the actions a lot, and it's really difficult when people are volunteers because they're all busy and so on. And so I've always had the thought about building some software to help me do it, because you're always getting emails throughout the day and when it's not appropriate and you have to ignore them, but then they're nagging in your mind because you've seen them, so you have to turn your email off or whatever. It's all that sort of stuff. And I'm wondering whether that might be my forever project, because I don't think there's enough interest there for me to want to turn it into a product, you know, to be able to do all the marketing and all the stuff that you have to do around it. But actually, it's a good excuse to get involved with writing some software just for the fun of it. So I've not done anything about it. It's just one of those ideas that's popped into my head. But that might become my forever project.
Yeah.
Because I'm back involved with it again now a little bit, the FSB. They're struggling at the moment for a secretary, a branch secretary.
I told you you'd get sucked back in, didn't I?
Yeah, I know. But I basically, you know, it's all about managing the meeting minutes and stuff like that. And so I was going to just do sort of a couple of hours a month going to a meeting.
Mm.
Now I've said that, look, instead of doing that, I'll just do the minutes and that's it. That's my job, effectively. So we'll see how it goes. I've made it clear it's a temporary arrangement. So if it starts taking too much time, then I'll just knock it on the head. But,
you know, the way to do it is if you wanted to take that project forward and then, you know, whether it becomes successful as an open source project or whatever, the way to make money from it is from hosting it.
Yeah.
Well, that's what SaaS is, I guess, isn't it? But,
yeah.
You know, then the techies can make use of it if they want to, because they can host it themselves because they download the source or they've been working it or whatever. But then you offer a hosted version as well for the business people who want something like that.
I think for me, what I'm going to do is just try and automate as much of the rote tasks that I can for me. And then if that's working out okay, then maybe some other people might want to use it as well.
Yep.
But for now, it's not going to be anything that I spend any large amount of time on.
Yep.
So, yeah, but no, it's just thought I'd mention it. It's popped into my head and it's something that may or may not be something I work on. And that's it, really. I've not really done that much else this week.
What have you been spending your more free time on than in the evenings and stuff?
I've had a couple of evenings of sitting around doing nothing, actually, which has been really good. The weekends always seem to be quite busy. I nearly killed myself on Sunday. I went for a long run on Sunday. The half marathon's coming up, Reading Half Marathon. And I hadn't done a proper long run, so I did 10 miles on Sunday in the afternoon.
Yep.
Got back and I felt knackered, obviously. Had my dinner and then refilled on water, obviously, try and rehydrate. Then about 8 o'clock, I thought, you know, I fancy a beer. So I had one beer. And it was fine, felt fine. The next morning, though, banging headache. For about 2 days, I couldn't get rid of this headache, yeah. I must have just been so dehydrated still that it just really took it out of me.
Yeah.
And, so I wouldn't recommend that. But other than that, no, it's been great. Good week.
Cool. So we thought we'd do something a bit different this week and do like a Q&A.
Yeah.
Well, we're giving the answers. And back about a month and a half ago, .NET Magazine got in contact and said, do we fancy doing a Q&A thing around bootstrapping questions? And so we had a couple of questions come over, but in the .NET Magazine, you've only got, was it 200 words to answer the questions? And the questions were kind of ones that you could go into quite a bit of depth in, weren't they? So we thought the questions and the answers are obviously in .NET Magazine, but we thought we'd go into them in a bit more detail on the show. And so I haven't actually got them here.
I've got them here, yeah.
I've got my answers written down, but not the actual
questions. So the first one was from Andy Lehman, and he asked, how do you decide if you should get funding/investors, versus saving money to start it yourself? So what was your sort of initial thought on it?
Well, I guess it would be ideal if we had done both, to both sides of the story. And I guess from people listening to the podcast and the name of it and the description of our podcast, they're going to understand perhaps, you know, the side that we would come down on.
Yeah.
But I think the most important bit was at the end of the question where he said, when you're starting up.
Yeah.
And I think in these days, you know, when you're looking to start something up, you shouldn't go after funding at all.
Mm.
You know, everyone's got a laptop at presumably these days, and most of the big players and cloud computing people and hosters have some kind of startup program to give you all the resources you would need and software you need to get started in terms of building things and programming stuff and so on. So, I wouldn't, for getting started and getting a proof of concept up or MVP or whatever you want to call it and testing the market, see if there's a need for what you're thinking of building. I would, the most expense or the resource that's needed is your time, really, rather than money, I think.
Yeah. Totally agree. I think, you know, there are several different ways that different people suggest approaching it these days. You know, you've got the sort of produce an MVP and then validate your assumptions, like the lean startup approach, where you can go out and talk to potential customers and work out what it is, you know, validate your assumptions as you go, which obviously just costs your time, really, and connect the time it takes to connect to people. You've got the idea of just going away and lots of research so that you know your customers inside and out, and so that you know what their pains are, and you know that if you built something, then it would solve those pains. And then, you know, there are other ways, like I've tried cold calling people and so on, to try and get information out of them to build things. So like you say, all of that, I think you need to do, choose at least one of those approaches, if not all of them, and try it up front so that you've got a really good idea that you're going to get anywhere. But it, you know, and you're right, I name of the podcast gives it away, but we would probably always go with self-funded and something small. But I guess if you're looking at something that's going to be potentially big or might require a lot of resources, you know, I've had a few ideas, if you like, based on my freelancing work, which would be targeted more at enterprise customers if they were to become a product. And in some cases, I've actually done some investigation around it and spoken to some people and so on. And you get to a point where you think, well, yes, we could do this, but I wouldn't be able to do it on my own. Or if I did do it on my own, it would be a very hard slog because you've got long sales cycles that you need to be able to deal with. You've got a lot of documentation that they're going to want before they'll take anything on. They're averse to the risk of dealing with just a one-man band, you know, or woman band or whatever, just a single-person startup. And a lot of them have, you know, procurement departments you need to get through before, even if the end client, the project manager or whoever it is you want to deal with, wants to buy your software, you've still got to get through the procurement department. And so if you're going into that in sort of environment, then you probably do need help, you know. You probably do need at least to hire some contractors to help do some of it. I'm not saying you can't do it on your own. You surely can. But it would probably be more like a full-time job than something you did on the side trying to do that. So then maybe you need to get some money from somewhere to help out with that if you haven't already got it.
And so this is, I was going to ask as a follow-up question, because you've taken both approaches, I guess. So the one thing that funding would give you is the ability to work on the idea full-time.
Yeah.
So if we're saying we're not going to take funding, though, would you... Your suggestions, you've done both of these approaches. Would you do contracting for 6 months to save up some money to give yourself a 6 month runway of savings to work on it full time? Or would you suggest, you know, still to work on it weekends and evenings?
I think for me, I would prefer to be able to have full time blocks to work on it because, as I've found the past few months, it's really difficult to try and fit it all in. And although you can make time in the evenings, maybe early in the morning or whatever, it does have a big impact on your life, especially if you've got, you know, family, wife and kids. You've got to fit in around them. Things happen with them that you can't predict, and so it knocks out maybe an evening or a morning or whatever it is you're going to do. So it's not impossible, and it's very doable. But I think if you've got a decent stretch of time where you can focus on something, then you can probably get more done. That's my personal approach, and it's more comfortable. You don't feel continually under the hammer to try and get stuff done. So my approach, my preferred approach, is to get the freelancing work when I can, as it comes, and then see the end of sight of that, you know, so when that's coming to an end, and then I've not got anything booked after these two projects I'm finishing now for the foreseeable future. Now, I know there are some things that are out there that will come in later on in the year, but I could have 2 or 3 months from April-ish onwards where there's maybe the odd couple of days, and I'm really looking forward to that because I can knuckle down and get on with something rather than have to scrimp and save hours here and there to try and do it. So long-winded story, but I'd try and build up a little bit of money to keep me going for that time, and then if that starts to get low, then I have to start getting out there and do some more contracting work, freelancing work. But if I can, I'll work as long as I can without taking more freelance.
Yep. So I think the one time, well, not the one time, but one time that would be good to take funding is once you've got the product, you've proven there's a market and a way to market it to people, and you've got, you know, the way to take funding will help you scale them, won't it, in terms of getting customers? Because if you've worked out that it costs £5 on Google Ads to get a customer that's actually worth £40, then, you know, you can scale it up quite quickly in terms of using that funding to spend on Google Ads to ramp up and get those customers in.
Well, I think you actually need some customers before you're going to get any funding as well. That's another thing, is you need to prove that you've got people that are willing to buy the product that you've got. And I guess it also depends on what kind of funding you're going for.
Well, I guess because Y Combinator, they invest in the idea and the people as much as...
Yeah.
Well, the business isn't even started up yet, is it, quite often?
That's right.
So I guess, yeah, and obviously having customers and, you know, proving that as a market puts you in a lot better position to go and get funding.
Yeah.
And you'll be, in theory, giving away less equity for whatever money it is you're after and stuff.
It might be better. I mean, the example I gave earlier about sort of maybe an enterprise product where you need additional support, then maybe it's better then to get a founding partner or something, or some other, a group of people together that you can all share in the equity of the business, but, you know, use your combined time and knowledge.
Yeah, I think that's especially good if you're not a developer and you need someone with technical skills to come on and help you with the idea.
Yeah,
I guess there's a certain survivor's, is it survivor's bias with this answer as well? Whereas if you've gone through the whole funding thing and it's worked out well for you, then obviously you're more likely to do it again and you'll sing its praises and stuff. But I know a couple of people who have gone through the funding thing. It's either not worked out well or they've lost control of their company. And you always hear horror stories of people losing control of their company and being kicked out as one of the founders and so on.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, with the bootstrapping lifestyle that we've perhaps chosen and route we're choosing, you know.
And I think that's it, actually. A lot of it is your why. You know, why are you doing it? Because if you're doing it because you like the freedom and, be your own boss, do what you want to do, then as soon as you start to take investment, you've kind of given a big chunk of that away, because although you will be able to run your day-to-day and the business the way you see fit, you have got people breathing down your neck that want a return on their investment. And so you are beholden to somebody else. And so, just have to be aware of that, that you're actually, as soon as you take investment, you've got that hanging over you, rather than you haven't got the complete freedom that you'd have if it was all on your back. So I love the idea of bootstrapping a business, because every decision I make is my decision, and it's not dependent on what anyone else wants. It's based on what I want to do. Now I'm not there yet, obviously, but hopefully one day I'll be there. And so I know that I rise or fall based on the decisions I make, not on the pressurized decisions I'm making or the decisions somebody else is trying to make for me or whatever for that business. So,
right. How long have we been going on for? I reckon we should perhaps save the other question for next time, maybe.
We've got about 20 minutes in.
Right. What was the other question then?
The other question was from WebWise Media. What's the best way to get sales initially without spending a fortune on advertising and marketing?
Hustling and hard work.
Absolutely.
Emailing lots of people, getting on the phone, doing the cold calling.
Yeah.
And hopefully next week I might be able to report back Twitter ads. We'll see.
Yeah. That is advertising, though. You know, the question is, without spending a fortune on advertising, now, I don't suppose you're going to spend a fortune, but a fortune is relative to what you've got in the bank, I suppose. So now I took the approach of spending about £20 a day on the advertising that I did to try and gauge interest, basically, in the products that I've done it on a few different ideas, products that I've been trying to put out there. And it's difficult because, again, startups, the rest of us, I've heard in the past, Mike Tabor was talking about same sort of things I do, spending about $100, £100 a week on ads to gauge the interest. Whereas Rob Walling was saying he'd put a few hundred dollars down a day just to get a really quick view on what the interest was.
That's the approach I've taken, to be honest.
Yeah. And so it kind of depends, really. Yeah, exactly. You fail quickly. So you know, within a couple of days you can know whether it's going to work or not. And both are valid. It kind of depends really how much money you've got and how much you're prepared to lose, put on the line for it. So it's also difficult these days, I think, with ads, because they are getting more expensive. So you do have to spend more money to get that opinion. But yeah, you're right. I like going to networking meetings. If you've got something where you know people are going to be, you know, maybe you're targeting accountants or something, and you know there's a meeting of accountants, maybe a conference or something, you can go along and talk to people, really. You have to make sure you do get out there and talk to people, though, because it's very easy to go to these things and just wander around and, you know, talk about the weather or talk about football, but you need to actually talk about what it is you want to do with people and get their honest opinions and collect business cards, etc. So face-to-face is really good, especially if you don't feel so comfortable on the phone doing cold calling or cold emailing even. For me, I personally find that once you get over the initial hello, my name's Martin, etc., it's really easy to talk to people. You can pick up on their body language about whether they want to be there, whether they don't want to be there, and sometimes you meet people that you can just talk with all night, and you have to be careful about that because you have to move on. So face-to-face networking, I think, is good, at least to get a good initial idea and maybe build up a few contacts.
Yeah, I think you know, to find a cheap way to do the sales, it's important to pick a niche as well that you can target. Well, picking a niche gives you a few things. So, for example, if I was just going to be building websites, you know, it's difficult to, you're advertising to a whole huge market there, aren't you?
Yeah.
Whereas if I'm building websites for golf pros, you know, I can pick a few couple of keywords that, you know, that niche
yeah.
can target them. And also around that niche, you know, make sure that there's either a directory or an easy way to find the contact details of those people to either ring them up and do the cold calling or send the emails like I've done.
Yeah.
Because up until now, I've not spent any money on the sales and marketing thing, but I've been able to send out, you know, a few hundred emails to golf pros and get their opinions and get feedback and so on.
Yeah.
So,
I think as well, you know, talking about getting sales initially, so it sounds like, you know, you're at the very early stages of the product. Going the extra mile, I think, is also a worthwhile thing to do. So if you do get some good contacts up front, then rather than just pushing them through the standard process that everyone's going to go through when, you know, eventually for your product, really hold their hand and really have a lot of contact with them and make sure that they have a really good experience going through it.
Mm.
Because once you get a few customers on there, I think you'll learn so much, you know. And so that learning is invaluable. And so it's worth doing things that don't scale early on with people, so that you can learn those things and
yep.
then improve your product and improve your marketing and everything else along with it. So that's something to bear in mind as well. Cool. I think hopefully that's done it.
Hopefully that's
if
helped.
Anybody's got any other follow-ups that we haven't covered.
Any thoughts? Us, yeah, give us some feedback.
Yeah,
tell us
definitely.
If we're speaking rubbish or any other questions. We're certainly interested in helping out if we can.
Yeah.
And our valuable opinions. It's two men in a shed.
Two men in a shed and their opinions, yeah.
Cool. Well, I guess we'll speak next week before you do the half marathon. I've obviously ducked out of doing it this year now.
Yeah.
My injury, my man flu, and everything else.
Yeah.
Going on.
Well, my legs were killing me after 10 miles, and so I've got to do 13 in just over a week.
I'll be there cheering you on.
Are you going to go?
Well, I'll feel really guilty if I don't. Probably.
Don't worry, I won't hold it against you.
Cool. Well, have a good week, and yeah. speak to you next
well,
week.
Well, hang on. Are we going to do stuff?
Oh yeah, sorry. Yeah, go on.
Have you got any?
I haven't. No, that's why I've kind of bypassed.
Well, I just one thing really, which came in yesterday. I think Brennan Dunn has written a really long article about. I think it's basically around productizing a service.
Yeah.
And he's kind of talked about somebody he's spoken with on one of his mastermind groups about how his mastermind group helped this guy. And it's called The Complete Guide to Finding and Selling E-commerce Clients. And I've been reading that, and it's really, really good.
Is it?
Yeah, yeah. Mm. It's really, you know, you kind of like, yeah, I mean, have a read of it. I'll put the link in the show notes.
So what, The Complete Guide to Finding E-commerce Clients?
To Finding and Selling E-commerce Clients. So selling to e-commerce clients.
So a developer helping somebody who's got an e-commerce website or something, do you mean?
Yeah, this guy, it's a... to help with sort of abandonment of shopping carts, that sort of thing.
Right. Okay.
But he kind of charges a monthly recurring rate, which is fairly low, and he wants to make it higher. And it's kind of about, you know, increasing your value and productizing that service so that you can make more money effectively,
right.
But you provide a better service, get more money and so on. But it's more about the whole productizing a service idea. And
yep.
I think it's definitely worth a read.
Very good.
And the other thing I saw which made me laugh this week was Quidditch in Batman's Back Garden.
I did read this.
Did you read that?
Put it in the notes, yeah.
It's hilarious.
What's that all about?
Well, people have invented a game called Quidditch, obviously, which is named after the Harry Potter game. Played on like a football field or whatever, but you have to run around with a stick between your legs as if it's a...
I thought the whole point and fun of the game was that you'd be flying on the broomstick.
Well, exactly, yeah. It's crazy, isn't it? But people are doing it. And they're really worried about the number of injuries that they're getting because of it.
How
it's
do they get injured then?
Well, it's apparently a bit like rugby. You had to whack each other and stuff and tackle each other and things. So that's how people are getting injured. So they're trying to adapt the rules to make it less injury prone. Fantastic.
Non-contact. Touch Quidditch next.
Yeah, touch Quidditch. I'll put the link in the show notes again, and you can have a read of that if you've got 5 minutes. I would love.
Cool.
Excellent. All right.
Catch up with you next week then. We're done now. Can I wrap it up?
Yeah.
Sorry, I did it early last time. Yeah. I put it down to man flu.
Yeah. All right.
All right.
Speak to you next week. Cheers.
Cheers. Bye.
Bye.